Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Benzinga's Cannabis Insider. I'm Pat Little, along with my great co-host, Abby Higginbotham. And we have a fantastic show for you today, right, Abby?
Absolutely. We are thrilled to have a special guest with us today, Caleb Counts. He is the co-founder and CEO of Connected Cannabis Co., a leader in the cannabis industry known for its premium products and strong ties to the music world, which I am very excited to get into.
Oh, yes. Caleb and his team have been instrumental in bringing top shelf cannabis strains like biscotti, gelato, baklava into the spotlight, thanks in part to their popularity with artists like A$AP Rocky, Travis Scott, and Young Thug. So let's get started. Hi, Caleb. We're very happy to have you on the show. How are you?
I'm good, guys. How are you guys doing today?
Fantastic. Happy to have you on.
Yeah.
Happy to be here.
All right. Well, we wanted to start with a question, serious question, and maybe hard-hitting too. What is your favorite way to partake?
It's blunts. And I've of course tried every method under the sun, from hot knifing in high school and college to, you know, the old makeshift water bongs or gravity bongs. But I still land with the blunt every time. That's my preference.
Quick follow-up on that. Was it an apple or was it like the toilet paper roll with the lint? Like,
I've smoked out of a ton of apples and even tin cans. Whatever's necessary, whatever it takes.
Definitely blunt is one of the best choices.
I would agree with that. And now getting into it a little bit, kind of tell us your journey with cannabis, how you got into it. Obviously, you mentioned a little bit as a teenager, but mostly what led you to found Connected Cannabis?
So, you know, I'd sold weed almost my entire life. I sold my first bag when I was 12, sold weed all the way through college, and only took a break after graduating from Chico State. Got into the real estate business for a little while in the kind of the boom in the 2003 to 2008 timeframe. Then after the crash, I had started getting back into selling weed, and I was just doing it the traditional way. I was just moving pounds that my friends were growing. And I decided to expand my horizons and hopefully my customer base, and went into a dispensary in Sacramento. And I was blown away by how poor the quality, how bad the customer service, how rude the customer, you know, the security and the check-in process, and the number of people cranking through that place. And I said, I'm in this business. And I opened up my first spot 6 months later.
Wow. And that's an interesting story. And we really love hearing stories from people that, I don't know if OG is the right word, but people that really are into the business before it got a mainstream, it got to be a mainstream, the mainstream business that is today. So, we are thrilled to hear that story.
I completely agree with Pato, but that and a 6 month turnaround, that's really fast. I mean, I guess 6 months seems like 7 years in the cannabis industry, but did you kind of plan on it, expect it to go that quickly?
So at that time, the city of Sacramento was not acknowledging the existence of dispensaries. Huh. So there was no permitting process, and they were not actively doing anything to shut them down. So when I went into that one dispensary, I think there was four in the city of Sacramento. And this was during Obama's first 4 years in office. And by the time I opened up, I was the seventh, and then quickly a bunch more opened in a very short period of time until there was 39 of them. And then the city finally was like, okay, we're going to do something. So they put in a moratorium. But for me, the requirement of opening a dispensary was getting a permit from the city for cut flowers or herbal supplements. It was one of the two. That's like, I did the research and that's what the other guys was. And I got a reseller's permit and a lease. And then about $15,000 of upgrades to the South Sac location where it currently still is, and a $65 used register off of Craigslist, and I was open. So 6 months, it technically it could have been done in a month, but so 6 months, you're right, in the cannabis business at that time, 6 months was an eternity.
Yeah, you definitely knew what you wanted to get from cannabis business, at least as you said. I mean, by the first disappointment from what was already working and the quality and the yeah, exactly, and the customer service that we're giving. So from that starting point, then to like develop and sell strains like Big Scotty and Gelato, which have gained so much attention and massive following. So I wanted to ask you, among this following that these strains have, the like one of the most important parts is the music industry. So what do you think has driven their popularity among artists and fans alike?
So when we acquired the Gelato genetics from a different group, but Biscotti is the first one that we developed our own, and we developed a significant strain specific marketing campaign in conjunction with Berner from Cookies, and so he actually came up with the name. We bred the genetics, and then he helped launch it. So he was already obviously in the music industry, deeply entrenched, and we were selling to a dispensary or a delivery in Southern California. Their orders went from like 3 to 4 pounds to everything we had, particularly of Biscotti. And I just called him up. I said, "What's going on?" And he said, "The Migos are one of my clients, and they're buying every pound of Biscotti that they can get." And wow. So I would say that was like the catalyst. And then I'd be remiss not to mention so let's say 6 months from that point where they're buying everything, I think they had maybe put it in a song at that point, and then all of a sudden TMZ flashes, and you know, when cops bust something, they love to put it on the little card table, their whole smash and grab effort. And it was the Migos tour bus. I think it was busted in North Carolina. You can still look it up. You can still easily find it. And it had a giant connected bag and a giant, like the pound bag. They were buying in pounds, not eights. So it had a cookies bag and a connected bag. And from there, it was just like, oh, shit. Like, I mean, that's the kind of press you can't pay for. You know, it's priceless. And so... So it really took off from there, and then we started doing, you know, getting some product to Young Thug and the YSL, that crew, and then they started putting it in their songs, and so it was like just something about Biscotti. I mean, Gelato really kicked off that flavor profile, I'd say, but then the Biscotti took it to a level that they just. They just found something in it. And I'll tell you, we're still in touch with, you know, the YSL crew and Travis Scott and a number of the other, you know, folks that have been on Biscotti for quite a while. And it's still, you know, in their top three go-tos, regardless of all the new genetics, all the stuff we've sent them in hopes of having something catch on, and it's tried and true Biscotti. So little bit of luck, right place, right time, and TMZ. Never thought I'd be thinking TMZ, but here we are.
Yeah, no, absolutely awesome.
That's what I wanted to get into. First, amazing, unexpected marketing. And second, you know, what I really want to know is what that phone call was like, what your initial reaction was to think, what happened? Whoa, who? What was that moment like for you?
So when he said the Migos, and that was right when they were blowing up, I'm like, wow, you know, we've got something here. And I immediately tried to, engage on a deeper level. Right. He was the one interacting with them. I'm like, I'd love to get down there. So we set up a time. We came down and talked with them and smoked with them. And it was a surreal experience, not because they're celebrities and whatever, but celebrities in their comfortable environment are just regular people too. But I'll never forget, I wasn't CEO at the time, but I brought the CEO of our company down with, and he sat on one of their chains. Like they had this massive chain, you know, with all the bling out, and he didn't see it. And he sat on it. Oh my God. I've never felt a room go from hot to extreme cold, bro, what do you? So that was like one of the highlights. But, you know, when I got the call for about Travis Scott through that same delivery service, we had already tried to do something with the Migos, and it quite frankly, it just like, it went from organic awesomeness, like this is exactly how products blow up, to like kind of like this exchange, you know, this attempted exchange, and it fell off, and I was kind of soured at that point. So Travis Scott called, and I was like, not interested, and I didn't even talk to anyone. And you know, I love all that music, but it's like not my first go-to. So I'm not deeply entrenched. I didn't quite realize who he was. I knew he was big, mm-hmm. And then he called back like 3 months later, and my guy was like, hey, you know, Travis Scott is calling again, and you really should consider this. And I was like, I'm just not into it. But I mentioned it to a friend. He about slapped that hat off my head. He's like, Travis Scott. And this was like right when he was dating Kylie, and it was like all hot. He's like, if you don't take that call in that meeting, you're a complete idiot. So went down, sat with him, smoked in his studio, super cool, down to earth guy. And then that ended up leading to a project that we worked on together for a short period of time. So surreal moments, but just, wow. You know,
phenomenal.
Thank you for sharing that. Yeah,
it's one thing I like that you said is celebrities are people, but you know, with just someone, these people with such an audience liking your product, it must feel like a, you know, a pat on the back.
Yeah, I mean, it was just, quite frankly, it was like hard to take in because we're just grinding it out, and this industry has been that. It's like, as all the exciting things that are happening around us, exciting, good and bad, it's like you're so engaged in the day to day, and there's always a challenge, and there's always, you know, something to figure out because there's no playbook for this business like there is other industries. And so, you know, in the moment, it was awesome. But then it's like, OK, like still have an entire business to run, still getting shit thrown at me left and right, just constant hurdles and challenges. So yeah, I loved it, but it's like onto the, like, how do we make money with this? Is there an opportunity to do so? How do we build on the brand? And we found that if it's not done organically, like if they don't want to talk about it organically in their songs, there's not really an amount of money, at least one that we could afford, that's going to translate into a meaningful ROI. Mm-hmm. So, you know, despite all of our efforts and working with them, we've kind of like retracted, and we love to get them product here and there and just, you know, make sure that they're smoking, it's in their, smoking our stuff, it's in their studio. And if they, you know, it still does get mentioned in songs from time to time. I think Biscotti is one of the most mentioned strains in all of mm-hmm. music. I think there's only over 400 mentions at last check. So
that
means more to me, like, than the interaction between one or two guys. Like the fact that people are taking the time to call out their favorite, you know, genetic, and it's something that we created as our first step into breeding, that is what it gets me excited to talk about.
Really cool. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I'm from Argentina, and here the trap from the US is like a very big influence to our local hip hop here, and we have a couple of trap stars here in Argentina that also have Biscotti in their and gelato in their lyrics. So now it's amazing to be talking to you about the history of these strange. And I wanted to jump.
Like, we got to get those guys some product.
Oh
yeah, sure.
Sounds like we got to get some of those Argentinian rappers some of our product.
Oh yeah, I'd love to. I'm gonna send you a song from Dookie, and I'm pretty sure you'd love to
right on.
Listen to some of his work. So I wanted to ask, you know, to jumping a little bit into the business side of our conversation, I wanted to ask you about like the company's growth, and you all have recently expanded into Arizona and Florida. So what challenges and opportunities have you encountered in these markets, and how do you plan to approach further national expansion?
So, you know, Arizona, I think we've been in for a little over 3 years, maybe almost 4 years. And you know, when we first got there, there was not a strong premium market. There was no California brands in the flower, on the flower side. And so it was a warm welcome. The California culture transfers right over the border. It was just like the same thing. And they had been watching and following what California is doing. And now one of the, you know, the premium brands that they've, you know, looked at and followed are right at their door and they don't got to drive. So that went over extremely well. Now, the downside of Arizona is, you know, the California price compression, heavy competition, overregulation has sort of has bled into Arizona. So it's like it's almost like a county of California. I mean, it's definitely a better market in terms of, you know, specific performance and some of the resistance to the price compression that's happened in California. There's still not a ton of competition in the premium segment. Florida was a whole nother animal, right? So that was our first attempt to prove that Connected and Alien Labs had staying power on the other side, right? Because I just made the argument why Arizona should have been easy for us, but you can't make that argument. Florida has an entirely different culture, entirely different expectations, not to mention the regulatory environment is extremely restrictive. It's medical only. Your packaging has to all be white. So, and we had to do it with a partner. Capital markets have been shut off. It's like 50 to 70 million to get into Florida at the time. And we found the partner in Trulieve. And as many challenges as have existed, you know, with the regulations and having to work, you know, in direct relationship with a partner that ultimately is responsible for the, at least the sales execution in their retail. It's been fantastic. We've learned a ton. We've proven out that, you know, Connected and Alien Labs has demand on the other side of the country in a completely different market. As far as expansion into the rest of the United States, we're in various conversations. The deal flow has picked up significantly over the last 6 months. I don't think it's coincidental that it's on the heels of the Schedule 3, you know, potentially happening. But we're getting calls from all over the country of guys that are in different phases of completion of a project and they're like realizing, like, we need the A team. Like, this thing, right. There's a lot of money invested. It's taken 2-3 years to get this project to the finish line. We're at the 1 yard line. We need experts. And so we're getting a lot of those calls. We're really focused on expansion opportunities on the East Coast and in the Midwest. And I think you're going to see Connected and Alien Labs products in at least 2 to 3 more states over the coming 12 to 18 months.
Okay. And I wanted to go back talking about Florida Amendment 3. Is this anything, you know, what are your thoughts on it? Some people are really like excited and positive about it. And maybe this is a change or just kind of maybe it's not going to do anything. What's your outlook?
I mean, look, every state that starts with medical is doing it for political cover, and almost every medical market is a rec market in disguise. And obviously there's some people seeking, you know, the medical need of cannabis, but, you know, I think the vast majority of folks are, you know, in it for the recreational benefits. At least the ones that are buying our products, I can't speak for, you know, obviously there's a lot of other medically targeted applications, but, I think having rec would be tremendous. It's projected, if it does pass, to be one of the biggest states, if not the biggest state, with all the tourism, with the, you know, a lot of the aging population that's realized, you know, a lot of the baby boomers that are realizing, okay, cannabis is back and now we're retired and our kids are out of the house and this is better than, you know, some of the other options. So I'm excited and hopeful that it passes. I mean, the political jockeying that's gone on, you know, with DeSantis most recently vetoing a hemp bill, a lot of people, you know, which is ultimately like the THCA, you know, Trojan horse legalization thing. He kicked the blocking of that industry out, which wherever you stand with that is, you know, it's neither here nor there, but he did it in hopes of engaging, you know, and getting them to try to kill the recreational bill. And I think that's self-defeating to the entire industry. Hemp and THCA cannabis should not be going head to head. We should not be fighting. We should be looking for opportunities to work together to benefit from each other and grow not only the access, but the quality of products, and just the industry acceptance as a whole.
I think a lot of people in the industry like agree with the sentiment too. We had our Benzinga Cannabis Capital Conference in Florida, you know, the state that we're talking about right now, and a lot of them had that same outlook. I will go back to regulatory, but I want to squeeze this question in really quick and discussing the product. So your focus on proprietary genetics has kind of set you guys apart. And what I want to know is what makes these genetics so important to the product development, and how do they give you an edge over other, maybe other cannabis companies?
So, you know, when we got into cultivation, I got into the business retail, into the legal side first at retail, and then quickly realized we need to take control over our supply chain and we need to get into cultivation and figure that out. And so, you know, being responsible for your own genetic development is another version of being in control of a part of your supply chain. If we're not developing our own genetics, we are only, you know, we're handing off a piece of our destiny to whoever else is developing the genetics, whatever access you can get to them. And you're just growing the same thing as everyone else. What is your differentiating factor? And what is your ability to sort of create something that is targeted towards the consumer base that you've identified that you're either currently serving or that you want to go after? And so I think genetic development is instrumental to any large scale, cannabis, certainly in the premium category. I think a lot of people are scared off from it, and it's a lot. We've taken on a big cost and a massive effort that really kicked off in 2016 and has done nothing but, you know, increase in speed since then. You know, we've talked about Biscotti, Gelinade, another big hit, but then the ability to just continue to put stuff out and try new things and willing to take risks. Like, we've built the reputation, we have the platform where we can put out things that are unique to what the vast majority of the market's putting out, and give people access. And sometimes, and it doesn't always work, but when it does work, you've created something unique. You've given a reason to the consumers to come to your brand, to listen to your story. I mean, some of the genetics that we're just now putting out have been the work of 4 years of breeding and crossing to get specifically like the Sativa Revival, we're calling it. I mean, that's a lot of work and it's a lot of time. We're putting over $3 million a year into our R&D and breeding programs. And, wow. And we think it's going to pay massive dividends. It already has, and it'll only continue to do so.
It's amazing to hear. I ask because a lot of our viewers are investors, and this is definitely a topic that investors would like to know about. So thank you for going in detail on that.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, Caleb, and my next question. Sustainability is a big thing now in cannabis. We see a lot of efforts from different companies trying to kind of give an answer to an audience that is interested every day more and more about cannabis and about sustainable ways to produce it in terms of energy, in terms of the products they are used. So how do you handle this at Connected?
So I think it's an important distinction to make that, you know, sustainability has different meanings to a lot of people. And I think a lot of people want it to mean a certain thing, but it can mean a lot of things, and your efforts can be targeted in a variety of efforts. So, you know, first of all, the primary focus of having a cultivation facility or flower production is output, right? You want to put out as much of the highest quality product as possible. And that's like forward facing. That's kind of obvious, but behind the scenes, it's like, how do you keep your costs in line or continue to reduce costs? And so a number of our efforts to be more efficient in our production absolutely fall under the category of sustainability. When we brought on a new cultivator from Big Ag, where they've got to try to find a penny, you know, and cannabis doesn't, you know, we're not in that tight of a spot, but it's getting tighter every day, right? So when Ian Justice came on, you know, one of the first things he did was increase yield. But what, as he did it, so that was like exciting, right? But his talking points that oftentimes got muffled out were how he did it. And it was actually by reducing inputs, reducing the amount of plants, reducing the size of the pot, pots are all the pots are plastic. So cutting those pots down by 60% in size, we went from a 3 gallon to a 1 gallon, and we reduced the number of plants on a table by 70% while maintaining the same amount of grow time. So the same amount of energy expended from a grow perspective. And uh-huh. And then we also cut fertilizer inputs by 70%. So we saw so that's medium, that's pots, that's wow. that's fertilizer under this and producing a higher amount. So at a lower cost per gram of inputs, energy included. But it didn't stop there. You know, one of the things that really I'm big on recycling. My parents taught me it's how important yeah. it is. And it's been something that's been ingrained in my head for a long time. One of the things that really bothered me is after every harvest, we were throwing away all these plastic pots. Yeah, there was 70% less of them and 70% less by material, but we're throwing them all away with all this beautiful soil that like any landscaper or like mulcher, or like, you know, would die to have. And so I tasked the team with figuring out a way to not throw those away. So we figured out a washing mechanism. So we wash our pots so that we reuse them, and we do it in a cost effective way. Because that was one of the pushbacks initially, is it's more expensive to wash them than it is to buy new ones, which is a sad state wow. of affairs in our world. But we figured out a way to have it, you know, cost the same or a little bit less. And then we found a local company where the vast majority of our production occurs in California that was willing to take all of our root balls and our used grow medium, and then they mulch that and recycle all of that. I also instituted a no plastic water bottle thing within the company. And we did custom Yetis to the entire company as a Christmas gift. And I'm just like, I'm sick of seeing these plastic bottles everywhere. So we have the large dispensers with the 5 gallon refillable jugs and cups. And then every employee's got their Alien and Connected Yeti. So, and then we're constantly like our R&D program never shuts off. And a lot of that is exploring new cultivation techniques or products. LED has been a big talk in the industry. Oh, it's going to reduce, you know, carbon footprint. Come to find out, a watt of LED to a watt of double-ended Gavita or whatever, that's the same amount of energy, which requires the same amount of cooling. Now, you might be able to get a little bit more production. They might be a little bit more efficient when operated correctly. So we're trialing every LED on the market. We're working with Gavita, we're working with Foes, we've worked with a number of them, and we're trialing them to make sure that we're able to maintain our quality and looking for any opportunity to become more efficient in the utilization of LEDs. But they've turned out to not be like that energy, the sustainability, that energy efficiency, saving grace that everyone thought they might be or was purported to mm-hmm. be. You know, it's a constantly evolving area of innovation, and we're at the forefront of trying it and working directly with the manufacturers to get not only the spectrum that works, but the output that makes the most sense for us, and just, you know, sharing data to try to look for any opportunity to become more efficient, which is ultimately being more sustainable.
That's phenomenal, the efforts and lengths that you guys are going to. Obviously, we love to hear that on the show. This is something we ask guests all the time of how their business is making sure that they're being sustainable. But our guests and, you know, investors who are listening also like mm-hmm. to hear this. So thank you for going into detail on that.
Yeah, well, thank you for the opportunity. It's a little bit of a personal passion for me. I care about the planet. I care about any impact, but I also want that impact to be meaningful, right? I think there's a lot of buzzwords out there, and it's like a lot of people are doing it, things for show or offering certain, and mm-hmm. when you actually like break it down the supply chain, there's not really a true impact. But I strongly believe that some of the things we've implemented are having a meaningful impact.
Absolutely. Thank you for sharing that. And jumping back to regulatory challenges, I have a kind of a mixed question between the more national regulatory changes that are going on, especially around rescheduling, and but also around maybe the DCC policies and the regulations in California. I want to know basically how do they affect your business operations, again, on the national side and also on the California side, as we know California's been going through, maybe because it's a mature market, I don't know, or if could be better regulated, but there are a lot of operators there that are struggling now, so I wanted to know your take on this.
I mean, some of it goes back to the fact that there's no limit on the number of licenses, right? And while I'm a firm believer in a free capital, you know, like a capitalism, like, you know, anyone should be able to come in and compete. Ultimately, that proves out to be best to the consumer. But when you have a regulatory body that can't keep up with the amount of licensees and the rules that they've even issued, and you see a lot of like picking and choosing, you know, if you're close to Sacramento, I think you get a lot more visits from the DCC than you are, you know, at the top of the state close to Oregon and in Humble. I think you get a lot more visits in Sacramento than you do. So it's just like, you know, where's all the money going? Where's all the taxes going? Like, why is the regulations considered to be so overly burdensome by the vast majority of the industry, and why are they so poorly and seemingly unevenly enforced? The more you follow the rules, the bigger you are, the more you get paid attention to, because you're like right there and easy. And then you've got all these other fly-by-night operators sort of skirting the rules and skirting the laws and getting slapped on the wrist. And it's just, quite frankly, it's laughable. We're I think one of the highest tax states in the country when it comes to cannabis. I mean, if you just like saw the breakdown, if I could put like the breakdown of the city taxes, the state taxes, and then not only that, but the annual licensing fees we pay at the city and the state, it's like there's no other industry that, you know, that is faced with that level of taxation. That is homegrown, right? That is California based and then attacked and overly burdened by that. So it's a challenge, but we've dealt with nothing but adversity in this industry. There has not been one easy day in this industry, whether, you know, we had little regulation in the past, but we're worried about going to prison. And that was a real thing. People went to prison that operated licensed cannabis dispensaries in California. So whether it's that, or, you know, when you look at it today and you're just like, you know, the most recent article about the testing, it's like, what's going on with the testing labs? And LA Times has to do a hit piece on, you know, and come out with that kind of stuff about all that pesticide stuff to shine the light on the fact that the DCC is not doing their job, and the labs, quite frankly, like that's a two way. I mean, that's like, that's, there's two major issues there. But we get up, we dust ourselves off every day. We walk in head first to the new challenges that are coming at us, and we're still here and we're not going anywhere, and we're looking to expand.
I really like that sentiment. I was going to ask, Caleb, are you at all planning on going to the Benzinga Cannabis Spotlight in California? We're having another one next month.
What's the date?
I believe it's the 26th. It's the end of July.
Yeah, it's if my marketing and PR team has put it on my calendar, then I'm probably going to be in attendance. I'm not as in much control of that as I used to be, and that's a good thing. So I let them guide my path.
Well, we would absolutely love to have you. I mean, conversations like that is, I think, needed in an industry event. So, final question.
July 23rd.
Yeah. July 23rd. Oh,
that's better. I'm in LA then, so that should be doable.
Absolutely, we would love to have you there. Yeah. But yes, circling back, final question for you: with all this ongoing expansion and development, tell us about your future projects and kind of, you know, what we can expect from Connected Cannabis here soon. Do you have any teasers that you might be able to share with us?
We're really excited about some conversations we're having in Michigan. Michigan, get ready. I think you're going to have a taste of Connected and Alien Lab.
Wow.
Pretty soon. And we're really excited about New York. We don't think right now is the right time to to pop up shop, so to speak, but we are planting the seeds. We have a number of conversations, and it's not an if, it's when we will be in New York. We're also talking about some Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, and Illinois opportunities, and actually another border state, Nevada. Nevada is another state where it's like there's no real California brands there, and we keep asking ourselves why. And mm-hmm. you're going to find ourselves wading into those waters to answer that question and come out to the shelves there. So, like I said, the inbound flow, deal flow right now is intense. The capital markets are still turned off. So we're really subject to, you know, partnership opportunities to get the spread and the impact we're looking for in a in any expansion project. So and that's not a bad thing. I love working with good partners. It's a lot of how we've gotten to where we are today, but that's probably the best. I think Michigan's the closest thing, and that's days away from launch, so I'm excited.
Oh yeah, and I know it's for us it's very exciting in particular because I've been seeing it's based in Detroit, so we really love to hear about those expansion plans.
Yeah,
Caleb, it's been fantastic having you on the show today. We really loved all the insights you gave us. So thank you again for sharing your journey and the exciting developments at Connected Cannabis.
Yeah, I mean, thank you guys. I really appreciate the opportunity, and thank you for the invite on the 23rd. I'm going to nudge my team and hopefully get a chance to shake you guys' hands in person. And I don't know, maybe I might have some products and some new connected launches available for you guys to check out.
Believe it or not, we're fans of cannabis. So I think we might take you up on that. But,
great news, great news.
Until next time, Caleb, thank you so much.
Right on, guys. Thank you.
What an incredible interview. A big thank you to our guests for joining in today and to our buds for tuning in.
Yes, and that wraps up today's Cannabis Insider. Before we go, remember to check out all our Benzinga daily content. Don't miss out on our upcoming events, including Benzinga Cannabis Capital Conference, along with our virtual events. For all the details, visit benzinga.com or benzinga.com/events.
None that you want to miss out on. So also follow us on all social medias to keep up with the latest cannabis news. I'm Abby Higginbotham.
And I am Pato Little. Remember to stay green, stay informed, and we'll see you next time. Bye for now.